Well, it does fit in a way with what I want to talk about this morning as we continue our series on everyday discipleship. And a question I want to ask to start us off, maybe one you haven't really thought of before when you think of Jesus, but I want to ask you this, and just take a moment to ponder it. Do you think Jesus enjoyed life? Do you think Jesus enjoyed life? I'm talking about the time that he spent on this earth, 33 or so years, whatever it ended up being. Do you think Jesus enjoyed life? And just kind of wrestle with that a little bit. And if you think that he did in some way or form, what evidence would you give to support your answer? If you've read the Bible yourself or heard the stories of Jesus, as you kind of think through what you've heard, what evidence might you present to say, oh yeah, Jesus enjoyed life, and here's an example. Here's why I think that. I propose that that might be a little bit more challenging than we might at first think. We might say yes because we think, well, of course he enjoyed life. But when we stop and think of what evidence we would propose, it doesn't seem to be there. We don't seem to read Bible verses that Jesus had a whole lot of fun doing this, right? I haven't found that one. But we read Bible verses that talk about certainly things that Jesus said, things that Jesus did. We certainly have a lot that talks about the cross and the last week of Jesus' life. There's a lot of emotion involved in that. But what about just enjoying life? You know, we often consider Jesus as kind of serious, I think. Most of the pictures many times we see of him, of course, you know, we know what Jesus looked like. So the pictures that we see of him, you know, often portray him in a more serious manner. Sometimes when he's with the little kids, you know, that's when you see him maybe smiling, laughing, hanging down in the children's area or something like that. So maybe he did. But we often picture him as kind of having the weight of the world on his shoulders. And I guess after all, he kind of did. So, you know, there's something to be said for that. He did bear the weight of our sin upon him. Isaiah describes him as a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. So even the Bible kind of gives a grim or at least a serious description of Jesus. And he was. He went through tremendously difficult things, especially going through his time heading up to and including the cross. But was that all he experienced during his time on earth? Was there something more? Now, I know some of you right now, especially if you're somewhat familiar with the Bible, you're like, I can't wait to see where he's going to go with this. Because I'm not sure where I would go to talk about a passage. Well, Hebrews tells us that he was tempted in every way, just as we are. And I think that's the point, that Jesus came to be one of us. He came to be like us. Now, he was without sin, and Hebrews is very clear that that's a significant way he wasn't like us. He never sinned. He was perfect. But if he was like us, I got to believe that our lives aren't serious all the time. And so didn't Jesus perhaps experience some other things as well? We see in the Gospels that Jesus was tired. He was hungry. He was sad. He got angry. He was frustrated, especially with those closest to him. And he was just like us. But could he have not also been someone who told jokes at dinner parties, danced at weddings, and laughed with kids? I mean, these are things maybe are alluded to, but I can picture him doing that. Or maybe we could imagine him, and this has actually been portrayed in the Passion of the Christ. Maybe you've seen this movie. Just having fun with his mom. And watch this clip.
Red.
Kenna.
You heard, ne? Here in Segi.
Hi.
Le man, ne?
I'm Nash Karathir.
Ratze mekel Paim. Athir de.
Le. Ratze mekel kidna. Shokan elaya. Karsi one elayan. Lao da te pain.
Ulal min laita.
Me.
Hey, la, la, la. Here they fodak mistanef, the trantin ul. Uasulia diet.
Now, that's one great mystery of the world solved. Now we know how we got high tables and chairs to sit at, you know. All right, so we have no biblical record that that ever took place. I understand. But I think the idea is it's interesting to think and to see an image of Jesus having fun with someone, enjoying a relationship with someone. And especially when we think about church, and I don't know if you grew up in church or what kind of church you grew up in, but certainly there can be churches that have reputations that fun is actually like a sin. Like if you smile in church, somebody's going to come and say, "What are you doing?" You know, or if you have a good time, then that must be something wrong. And that's, I think, sad. And I don't really think that's what Jesus wants his church to look like. I think Jesus had a lot of joy to him. I think people enjoyed being around Jesus because he loved people well and he enjoyed the creation, the world that he had made. But what did it look like to hang out with Jesus? I'm not so sure he sat around all day discussing the Torah with whoever was around him. He certainly did talk about the Word and his Father and his mission, and all of those things were critical to him. He worked. You know that he was likely a carpenter as his father before him. But I believe he also had fun enjoying life and those around him. Maybe he even played their version, who knows what they had in that day, of cornhole. You know, maybe he did. Maybe it was a picnic one time or a celebration, and he actually played a game and enjoyed, you know, doing something with his friends. Jesus would have put it in the hole, we know, right? Well, God is not silent on this topic. He talks about this idea, and even from the very beginning, God created this entire world, and we read that he did it in a period of time, 6 days, and then on the seventh day, he rested from his work. And he set up this idea that we shouldn't just be about working all the time. We should also have periods of rest where we can be restored, where we can focus on worship to him, also on relationships of those who are around us. That's a part of how God put it right into our system. He still desires us not to just work all the time, but to have those times of break, recreation, and restoration. He wants us to do that. When we gather for worship here at Davisville, we believe that our time should include celebration. You'll notice that in the songs that we do, there is an element of celebration in what we do. Because as people who are adopted into God's family, don't we have the most to celebrate of anyone on this planet? I mean, just stop and think about it. God of heaven, who made everything, has adopted us and offered us to be adopted us into his forever family. Shouldn't that bring some sense of joy? To know that everything I've ever done or will do that's offensive to God has been forgiven because of what Jesus did for me, there should be a sense of celebration. C.S. Lewis said, "The purest laughter on earth dwells in the kingdom of joy. Those who most understand what Jesus has done for them and have come into his family should be those who have the purest sense of joy and laughter." When the Jewish people gathered for their festivals, as God told them to do, he instituted several of them. There would be singing, there would be dancing. Yep, dancing. In fact, when the Ark of the Covenant came into Jerusalem, you can read this in the Bible, we're told that King David danced with all his might, so much so that his wife thought he looked silly. Just saying. For some of us, if we danced with all our might, we would look silly. But is that maybe perhaps an expression of joy? Just where we can't keep it in anymore. Most likely it was King David's son, wise King Solomon, who wrote these words. We find them in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. "There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance." There seems to be a balance there. And we might even say there's a time to pick corn, and there's a time to play cornhole. So I'm just building the suspense. So here's the point, and I think especially as we look at Ecclesiastes, don't exclude one aspect or the other. Keep them in balance. Life is about things that are serious, but life can also be about things that are fun. And we need to keep those things in balance because God created us to express both sides of the coin. So I want to look at an example of balance this morning, and this has to do with our possessions and what we have. And so if you have your Bibles, I encourage you to open to 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6. It's on page 1177 in your pew Bible. 1177. And here Paul is the writer of 1 Timothy. He's writing it to his protege, Timothy, and he's writing them with instructions, not only for himself, but also instructions to share with other people about what it means to follow God well. And in verse 6, we're going to pick it up in verse 6, he says these words. He says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." And in the verse ahead, he had just made something about financial aspects, so he's kind of building on that thought. "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." Now, as you read that section, it seems kind of like more on the serious side. It's like a warning. It's like Paul's warning Timothy to warn other people, saying, look, in the church in which you're serving, and especially in the culture of that day, there was a middle class that was growing, and there was opportunity to gain wealth pretty significantly. And so some were making that their chief aim. This is our opportunity. We want to get as much as we can, to get as rich as we can. It's still many people's goal today. And he's warning about that, saying, be careful if you make that your number one aim. Now remember, he's not saying there's necessarily something wrong with having wealth. He's saying if you make the gaining of wealth your number one goal, your number one priority, that's a problem, because you will do things to get that wealth that you should not do as a follower of Jesus. We have probably all been in situations, if you have worked anywhere, anytime, where you could have gotten more money by making a choice that you knew was not what Jesus wanted you to do. Either through lying, deceiving somebody, taking something that didn't belong to you, stealing. There's a number of ways in which you could probably have gotten more resources, but it probably would have taken you compromising your integrity and being as a follower of Jesus to achieve that goal. I think that's part of why God calls us to follow him and tests us in those areas. If we'll trust him, we see so many times that he blesses us if we're willing to stay the course. So it certainly is a warning. He doesn't want to see people go into ruin and destruction. He doesn't want to see people wander from the faith and pierce themselves with many griefs as they go after other things as more important than God. So we might say that's one side of the scale. And then the next verses, he's going to talk specifically to Timothy about some things, but I want to jump down to verse 17 where he picks up this theme of wealth again and resources. And he says in verse 17, "Command those who are rich in this present world," those who have significant resources, "not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God." So again, a little bit of the warning piece. Remember, don't put your hope, don't put your faith in your resources. Don't count on your resources to be everything you need, because God is the one. Resources can come and go. They're uncertain. They can come quickly. They can go quickly. Many of you have been in situations maybe where you had significant resource lost or significant resource gained in a relatively short amount of time. They come, they go. But to put your hope in God. Now notice what he says here. Who richly, interesting, because those who are rich, God is the one who richly provides us with everything. And then look at these next three words. For our enjoyment. He richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. When God gives us a blessing, he wants us to enjoy it. And I think sometimes, especially as followers of Jesus, depending again on your church background, what you've been taught, you almost feel like I'm not allowed to do that. Like if I enjoy something, that's like something wrong with it. No, God has blessed us, and he has blessed every one of us in this room, especially when he compares us with the rest of the world. And he wants us to enjoy what it is that he's given to us. Enjoy it. If you've got that large, 80-inch TV to watch the game, enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it. Please, can we enjoy it today? Okay? enjoy it. If you've got a car that, you know, is great, enjoy that vehicle. Enjoy the home that you live in. Enjoy the resources that God has given you. It's okay to enjoy what God has blessed us with. But again, that's kept in balance. Don't let those things or the resources that give you those things become the central focus of your life. So enjoy, but don't worship. Don't let it become an idol in your life. And then he goes on to say, verse 18, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, not just in resources, but in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. So here it is. God gives, enjoy what God has given to you, and make sure that you are giving and sharing those resources with other people as well. It really is that simple. It really is. In this way, verse 19, those who have resources will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, not for now, but for later. How we use what God has given us now lays a foundation for God's blessing in the future, for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. You really want to live? Enjoy the resources God's given you and share what you have with others. And you can enjoy life like you wouldn't any other way. So what are the principles that we learn here? Enjoy possessions as blessings from God. That's what they are. Thank Him for them. God, thank you for the job you've given me. Thank you for the home that I live in. Thank you for this vehicle that I can drive on a rainy day instead of having to walk or ride a bike or whatever the case may be. If you have a bike, that's what you have. Thank you for this bike that gets me where I need to go. We can be grateful for whatever it is that God has given to us. And we should. Regularly. I think that's one of the great principles of just stopping to pray before you eat. I know sometimes it can become almost like this regimented thing, like this is what we have to do. What is it? It's a great reminder that every time I go to put food in my mouth, I stop and say thank you to the one who provided that food. And it's not just food. He's provided everything, but it's just one of those great things during the day. It's simple. What does it do? It helps me remember God's the one who's provided this for me. And then enjoy it. Enjoy it. And then not only enjoy possessions as blessings from God, but share possessions as blessings from God. In other words, God has given this to me. I recognize that. And so now I have the joy of sharing and passing this on to be a blessing to someone else. Whatever that could look like, however God lays that on your heart. You heard some opportunities this morning. Maybe God's saying, you know what, some financial resources, I'm going to use those to bless a child to be part of Reach and pay for their fee to be a part of the program. Share our possessions as blessings from God. And then here's the warning. So enjoy them, share them, and don't treat possessions as your God. Last week we talked about Athens and all these statues to all these different deities and the statue to the unknown God. And we talked about in our culture how possessions and money can become one of our idols, one of the things that we bow down to. And we can see that in how we live and the decisions that we make. Don't treat possessions as your God. Don't make them an idol. Because they are a bad God. They're not worthy to follow. But they are worthy to enjoy and to share. And that's what God has. How do you know the difference? How do you know when possessions have the right place in your life versus when they're becoming an idol or a God? I think this is a great question to struggle with. Okay, I have resources. You know, I'm enjoying. Does that mean I'm making them an idol? How do I know? Well, I think Paul gives us some clues here. When what you have is never enough, when you're never content, then probably you're leaning towards making possessions or things in a wrong place in your life. Because how do you start out? Godliness with contentment is great gain. So to be able to always say, Jesus, thank you for what you've given me, I can be content here. It doesn't mean we don't necessarily at times strive, you know, take the promotion or move into that next spot. It doesn't mean we don't do that. But that isn't, again, all that life is wrapped up to be. Instead, it's like, God, thank you for where you have me, and just thank you for the blessings you've given. And sometimes also we can know that we're maybe going down the wrong road. When we worry about keeping what we have, it becomes consuming to us. How do I protect what I have? How do I keep it? Instead of joyfully sharing with others. When your possessions become a source of security instead of blessing, you may be heading down the wrong road. Because God is our source of security. Not the things that we have. In our culture today, man, I know I'm moving ahead in years, and you begin to think about what the future is going to hold. And for many of us in our category, you look at those accounts or those investments that you're making or retirement, whatever you're doing to provide for yourself when you get to that stage of life, right? And it can be so easy to be like, well, that's where my hope is. No, my hope is in God. Doesn't mean I don't plan. Doesn't mean I don't try to prepare for things so that I can, again, continue to be generous and do the things that God's called me to do. But ultimately, my life, all of our lives, are in His hands. And that needs to be where we find our security. So don't let leisure, pleasure, or possessions become an idol. Don't let them become your God. But don't feel guilty every time you're enjoying something either. It's okay to have a good time. Thank God for it and enjoy it. Now, of course, that needs to be within the rounds of how God has set things up. You know, if we're having a good time doing something that He says is absolutely not something we should do, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just enjoying the blessings that He's given to us. And then let me just, as we move towards our conclusion, how do we use leisure effectively? Let me just wrestle with that question a little bit. I think hopefully we've made the case that we need to have this balance in our lives, and we've used possessions as an illustration of that. But in that time that we have to rest and recreate, how do we use that effectively? And there's three things I want to propose that we use our leisure time for. And first is just to worship God, that when we rest from our work, that we allow our focus even more to go up. Part of the reason that we gather here on a Sunday is so that collectively we can reorient our focus to what is significantly important. Because it is easy for us during the course of our week to become distracted, to go off track. I find just about every Sunday as I come in here, and I know that this is considered my job, so it's work for me to do what I do today. But as I walk in and we begin the music and the songs, I just feel it. I feel myself getting back on track. I feel that reorientation beginning to happen. And there's something about doing it together. It's great to be able to, you know, watch this on a video for those who can't be here or traveling, or that's a wonderful thing, but there's also something dynamic about us doing it collectively as a group. There's something restorative about worshiping God. But that can happen also on our own. For you, you may take your time, your leisure time, to go on a hike or a fishing trip or a museum visit or anything it is that you might enjoy, and enjoy it. But thank God for it. See Him in it. I love being out in nature. Even the other day, I was walking out of the church building and looking across and seeing the trees over there. It was a totally blue sky, and the trees were red and gold. And I just stopped for a moment and said, wow, that's just impressive. You see a rainbow or the sunset or sunrise or any kind of thing, you just to stop and offer up that worship to God and say, in my leisure, I see You, God. And so many times when we're busy with our jobs and our work, our heads are down and we don't look up to see God and give Him the credit and the worship that He deserves. Jesus often used nature to point people to God. He did it regularly. He would take something out of nature and use it for a biblical example or spiritual principle. He was regularly doing that. And in our times in nature too, we need to see God in those things. Secondly, we can use our leisure effectively to present truth. To present truth. And I mean now when we're hanging with other people. Many times we enjoy leisure with others, and that's a great thing. To build those relationships, which we'll get to in just a minute. But when we're with people and we're around them, it's a great opportunity to present truth. Defenses are down. You know, we're enjoying being together. This is not some formal meeting. We're just having a game of cornhole and enjoying playing a game and standing next to each other and have an opportunity to talk about things. Conversations can breathe when we're in that leisure time. Again, we're not on this tight schedule, but we can just hang out and talk. The other day, our family was just all sitting in our living room, and just conversation was going on. I thought to myself, you know, we haven't just done this in a while. This is so good. And nobody had to run off and be somewhere. We could just sit there and talk together. It's a wonderful thing. It's amazing what can come up in those times. And you can get to the heart of matters, and sometimes people have something that they want to share. Those are often great opportunities to present truth. I think of Jesus in the upper room, sitting at a meal with His friends, and the amount of truth that He presented to them in that time. He did it often. Worship God, present truth, build relationships. We can use leisure to build relationships. Again, for all the reasons I just said, conversations can breathe, we just have time. But we can share common positive experiences with people. In our leisure, we can do something that we're enjoying, which builds a positive experience, which allows us to connect. You know, bridging to next week, this also happens a lot when you serve together, right? If you do something, you're getting into it, you're enjoying it. Maybe you have skills in building something like our Go Fix team, and they're looking at a possible trip next year to Alaska, and that's something that you enjoy doing. You get together the group of people, and you're doing something profitable that you're enjoying, and you have conversations, relationships get built. Those are the kinds of things that get talked about for years, right? Get involved in our kids' ministry downstairs with another group of people in that class, and you're serving with them side by side once a month or whatever it is that you can do, and you begin to build that relationship. You get to know people through sharing common positive experiences. Think about it in your marriage. For those of you who are married, for those of you who have children, how are you seeking to build positive experiences in your marriage and in your family? Husbands, since I am one, let me talk to you. How are we seeking to build positive experiences with our wives? Jody and I had the opportunity to just go out on a date just this past week and just sit together and look at each other and talk without anybody else around and just enjoy being out where nobody knew us. It was wonderful. I like seeing you out there, but it's nice to not be known sometimes. And it was just great. And we invested in our relationship in that time. Are you doing that on a consistent basis? We could probably improve. But are you doing that on a consistent basis? How about with your kids, if you have children, especially younger children? How are you building positive experiences in your kids' lives? And although going to Disney, for whatever time is wonderful, and that's a great way to do it, but not just once a year. Like, how can you do it on a consistent basis where you're doing things that they enjoy? And yeah, you may not so much, but you're doing it because they do it. And you're just enjoying watching them enjoy whatever it may be. And it's an opportunity to build relationships. We use our leisure time to do that. I think of Jesus sitting at a campfire with six of his friends after he rose from the dead and feeding them bread and fish and just hanging out with them. I think of him around a table with Matthew, a tax collector, with Zacchaeus, another tax collector, and around the table are a whole bunch of people that society looked down on. In fact, he was criticized because he was hanging out with the sinners. And there was Jesus, having leisure time around a table with people that religious people thought he shouldn't be with. Let that sink in. Can we be a place where we don't criticize each other because we actually go hang out with people who need Jesus? Because remember our first message? We all need Jesus every day. So let's go be around other people who need Jesus. Yeah, we don't compromise our faith in doing that, but we can find ways to see that happen. Because we need to be a witness to those who are out there. Who knows for us what it could look like to build relationships doing leisure things. I do like to imagine Jesus playing cornhole. Here we go. But then I'm not Jesus. We all are very aware of that. Let me close with this verse from James chapter 1. Every good and perfect gift is from above. Every good and perfect gift is from above. Coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. God's nature is to give good gifts to his kids. He loves doing it. He loves doing it, and he loves seeing his kids. Just like, think about as a parent, giving your child a gift for Christmas or for their birthday or just because. We do just because sometimes in our house. There's no real reason. I just wanted to do it. And you watch their joy of what they received. I think our Father has that same joy. He loves to give us gifts, and he loves to see his kids enjoy them, the ones that he has given. So everyday discipleship means enjoying Jesus and his gifts every day. It means enjoying Jesus and his gifts every day. It's okay. In fact, it's good. Because as we do that, we have opportunity to express worship. We have opportunity to express truth. We have opportunity to build relationships. We have opportunity to be restored. Because that's what God desires for his followers. Not just to be about work, 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 but about also restoration and recreation. That's part of his story. And that's part of his story for all of us. Let's pray together. Father, thank you for who you are, all of who you are. Jesus, we worship you this morning because you are the one and only Son of God. I know that in your presence, I would probably be on my face before you in your splendor and your glory. But I also believe that there would come a time where you would lift me up and we'd have a conversation together. And you would show me around this amazing place that you've created for those who love you and know you. We call it heaven. And you would have a smile on your face as you pointed out how you did it and what you did. And you would just be, you would get joy from watching me be in awe and enjoying what you've made. And if that's how it's going to be, why can't it be that way now? Why can't I bow at your feet now and worship you for who you are, but also enjoy just having a conversation with you as I read your word and then spend time listening to your voice? As I interact with other people in leisure time and seek to redeem that in positive ways for your honor and glory, but just believing that you smile in watching me enjoy your creation and the people that you've made and the relationships that I have. And so, Father, as a church family here, may we be that. May we be people who every day enjoy you, Jesus, and the gifts that you've given to us. Share those with others. Never let the gifts become our God, but always make sure that the gifts point us to you as our God, and thank you for them. But also be willing to use those and the opportunities and time you've given us to be a blessing to others, to just enjoy being with those who are close to us, our families, our friends, but also those who maybe are farther out in the circle, so to speak, who also need Jesus, and to spend time there as well as you lead us and as you guide us. You are great, and in this song we're about to sing, we acknowledge that, and you are good, and we thank you so much for that. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.